They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Welcome, listening audience, back to the Magellan's at the Movies podcast. I am Nathan Mogul-Yines, as always, with my co-host, Elliot Mogul-Yines, and not as always, with my co-co-host, Shadow, our family dog, who is just hanging out, might be heard at some portions of this episode, so if you hear sniffling, it's not me, I'm not sick, it's our dog. But, Elliot, you saw some movies this weekend, I heard. What did you think? You know, should the people see these things?
Well, I just saw one. Just one. Didn't have the chance to see Anemone. Although, based on the reviews, maybe that's not so much of a loss. But I still would like to see it. The movie that I did see is The Smashing Machine, which you may have heard of. Judging by its box office take, you probably haven't seen, but it's supposed to be Dwayne The Rock Johnson, or maybe he just wants to be called Dwayne Johnson now.
Yeah.
Because this is supposed to be his accession to serious acting, capital letters. Yeah. He plays Mark Kerr, an early star of the, I think, MMA scene.
Okay.
Directed by one half of the Safdie brothers, the people who brought us Uncut Gems, which is a movie that I'm very fond of. This movie's nothing like that, in case you were, if you're like a huge Safdie brothers fan. This is a pretty standard sports biopic with the addiction, the crying, tumultuous relationships, all of that kind of stuff. The question that I'm guessing is on anyone's mind, if anyone has a question about this movie, is, will it work for Dwayne? Is it worth seeing for his performance? I'm going to say I don't know and no, respectively.
Oh, okay.
I think this is easily his best performance, but I don't want to be mean here.
It's compared with very little. I'll be mean. I'm more than happy being mean. There's nothing else that you would put in that category of a good performance from Dwayne.
Okay, well, let's have as few comments as possible from people who haven't seen the movie.
Oh, whatever.
I'm just saying the dude wants to try something new. He's clearly passionate about acting, or at least he is committed to it. So I don't want to rain all over his parade. I'm just saying I would be surprised if he got a nomination this award season. And in general, the movie, it's fine, right? It's stuff that you've seen before. I think that the thing about this movie has always been Dwayne Johnson's turn to serious roles.
Yeah.
And it's there. If you're like super, super interested in following the meta of actors' careers, I mean, there you go. You can get in on the ground floor. But if you want to see a great movie, It's just not that.
That's surprising to me. As you already mentioned, I didn't see it. I don't really have any plans to see it. It sounds like the kind of movie that people talk about for like a month, if that, and then they don't talk about it much after that. Kind of shows us if you know, which of the Safdie brothers is which of the Coen brothers. It depending on how Marty Supreme goes, we might have our answer to that question this year. About which, who's the talented one and who's the Ethan one. No offense to Ethan Coen, very talented gentleman, I'm sure.
That is funny.
Thank you.
I don't know. Speaking of the Coen brothers, apparently there have been stills or some kind of promotional images coming out of, what is it?
Jack of Spades is the name I've seen.
Jack of Spades. from Joel Coen, so that's exciting. It's exciting for me.
It is exciting. I really like The Tragedy of Macbeth. I'd love to watch it someday again, I guess. But yeah, I'm excited for that. I'm kind of excited for Marty Supreme. I kind of was joking about it, but it screened for the first time and reviews were very positive. So I think it sounds kind of neat. It sounds like a neat sort of movie, but we'll see. Anyway, Elliot, no sense in spending more time here than we need to. Let's talk about the movie we're talking about today. And I am really fascinated about this one because we're talking about Weapons, which made a big splash over the summer, did very well at the box office. It was a bit of a big swing. It was a lot of money entrusted to just a sophomore outing from director Zach Cregger, and he seems to have hit it out of the park. The movie did fantastic. It received raves. People keep bringing it up in Oscar conversations, which I will share my opinion of as we go into this episode. But I watched it. I think I shared on the podcast my thoughts on it. But now we're getting a full review. Elliot, what happened? You know, how did this come about that this was the movie that we're reviewing this week?
It's nothing special, certainly nothing as special as that setup seemed to want it to be. Over the weekend, I watched it while I was feeling ill, and I just had thoughts about it.
Me too.
Let me tell you. End of story.
Yeah.
That's my favorite line from Fargo. End of story.
End of story.
So, this movie was the surprise hit, probably the surprise hit of the summer. Zach Cregger, having established himself as a capable horror director with Barbarian, which I have not seen, his script ended up in a bidding war that concluded to the tune of $38 million, with $10 million for Zach Cregger up front. It's like cash up front, I think.
Wow.
Do you think you could live the rest of your life on $10 million?
You know, I recently, my bank account gets a percentage. The money that you save in the bank account gets a percentage of it. And I calculated out because I was interested in this, because right now I'm getting 47 cents or something every month in this interest accumulation. But I calculated out to see, okay, how much money would I need to have in there in order to basically make back my salary in this percentage thing. And I calculated out, and it wasn't too bad. It was like $500,000. If I had $500,000 in my bank account, I would basically be paying myself just for living every month, and I would never have to do anything ever again. I wouldn't be able to, increase my current style of living. I wouldn't be able to go on ridiculous trips or anything, but everything would be PG keen. So yeah, $10 million for sure. If you wanted to send half of that, half of a milli to me, I'd be in business.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just thinking when I was doing research for this movie, I know we're getting way off track.
A digression here. There. Yeah.
But I was just thinking if I had $10 million, I would not have to, without barring some kind of financial mishap, I probably could make that last for the rest of my life.
Definitely. Definitely.
Basically what I'm saying is I'm working on my horror script, hoping for a similar kind of situation here.
Yeah,
but in the meantime, let's talk about Zach's script.
Yep.
So this came out, did really well for itself. Everyone loved it, got great reviews, made a good chunk of change, and it's pretty much off to the races for Zach Cregger's next movie, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
But, as we've said many times before on this program, it is easy to get critical acclaim. It is way harder to get Magellan's at the Movie, a thumbs up for Magellan's at the Movie. Certainly, it's way harder for both of us to give a thumbs up to the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess, well, do you want to go first? Do you want me to?
I can go first because I've already kind of shared, I think, my opinions on this podcast. I think I've shared my opinion with you that I think this is the classic example of a modern movie that is flash without any fire. It is a lot of sick technical and cutesy little narrative tricks that are fun to watch once, but that I cannot imagine myself ever revisiting. We talked about this last week with One Battle After Another, of reading reviews where we're like, how on earth are you getting that from this movie? Weapons is another great example of that. I see a lot of people saying that it's about a lot of things, and then I watch the movie, and I cannot find any evidence in any nook or cranny of this film to support the things people are saying in some of these reviews. And I'll get into, as we go on, why I think people are really enjoying this movie, which is kind of similar to why I think people really enjoy One Battle After Another, but I think I'm really kind of very middling on this movie overall.
Wow. Well, get excited for Nathan's controversial takes. Nathan, I'm inclined to agree.
Yes.
And I think that we are doing, for the second week in a row, we are bringing a much more measured kind of response to a movie that has received overwhelming critical and audience acclaim. This movie is by no means bad.
Yeah.
It's slick. It's well shot, well acted. It's got some cool moments in it.
Yes.
It's, I think, very similar to One Battle After Another. It's enjoyable to watch. But this is the kind of movie that I think is perfect to watch when you're feeling ill.
Yeah.
Because you can just be, you can just sort of enjoy the sharp cinematography, the nice performances, maybe get creeped out. I did not find this movie very scary at all. And that is something coming from me, who finds things scary pretty often.
Yeah.
I think that this is the most Stephen King movie to not be based on a Stephen King book. And I'm including,
sure,
in that, the needlessly abrupt, unsatisfying ending.
Mm.
Like, the setting in a small town, it gets rocked by an inexplicable event. Our characters are like blue-collar, everyday Joes, just sort of looking into something that they're not at all prepared for. And I can definitely see a version of this movie that really works. A version of this movie that I like as much as the version, as other people like the version that exists now. But I think if that movie needs to exist, you will need to get rid of the chapters thing.
Mm.
That is far and away my biggest sticking point with this movie. I do not understand what we gain from splitting it up into chapters such that the movie does not have a main character.
Mm.
When I was doing research on this movie, Zach Cregger said that one of his inspirations was Magnolia. And I was like, hey, that makes total sense, because this movie has the exact same problem as Magnolia. I guess let's just start there with the structure.
No, I'd love to talk about the structure, because I think the structure was one of the big sticking points for me as well. And this is a tricky one to get into, because I might have told this story on the podcast before, but when I took a film criticism class, one of the movies we had to watch for it was Memento, which is also a movie that kind of plays with a different sort of storytelling structure, right? It's done, it's not strictly in reverse, but it's done non-linearly. And one of the people in my class kind of belittled the film, saying, if this movie was told straightforwardly, it would suck. Which I find to be a poor criticism of the movie, because it feels to me like saying, if this movie was made badly, it would be a badly made movie. Like, obviously, right? If Anthony Hopkins' performance in The Father was terrible, that movie wouldn't work. Thank goodness we got a version where it does, and it's amazing. And so I don't want to criticize Weapons by just saying, oh, this story is kind of lame if you make it linear, because, right, that's saying the movie would be worse if it was changed. But I do agree with your point that it being non-linear doesn't help anything, especially when it feels like the movie wants to do. I think the comparison to Magnolia is that the event of the movie, right, these kids running off into the distance, is a difficult event for the people in the town to grapple with. And so the idea is, let's show people grappling with this in a lot of different ways, is one of the things I've seen people say. Another thing is, let's see, right, kind of a Rashomon sort of thing, where let's see how different people interpret different events. I don't think either of these holds, because neither of those are stuff that happened in this movie. I don't think there's anywhere in the movie where we see an event from one side and then see it from another side and go, oh my goodness, that's so different. There's very few moments in this movie where we see an event twice. The only one that I can think of off the top of my head is Paul going to meet Justine in the bar. And even then, we don't see like the full experience twice. We just see kind of the beginning of it a little bit from his perspective. And I guess we see some other things start, like we see there's not a ton of stuff that's happening twice, and so it doesn't seem to me to be that. And then this saying that it's investigating all these different facets of trauma or whatever, where is that evident? Obviously, yes, with the first two characters, Justine and then Josh Brolin's character, whose name is escaping me right now.
Archer.
Obviously, those two, right, are experiencing grief in different ways. Archer grieving his son being gone and Justine grieving her entire class being gone. But then a lot of the other people in the movie are not experiencing anything. Like, the drug junkie guy is, he doesn't care about kids being gone. He's addicted to drugs. Paul doesn't really care that much and doesn't seem to really be doing anything besides assaulting civilians. And then this scumbag dog. And then especially later in the movie, it feels like the non-linear thing is just there to, like, explain things that are happening, like explain the plot, and not actually serve in any way to like meaningfully explore any ideas. I think the principal story is the perfect example of that. Like, it only exists to introduce Gladys and introduce her original powers before we then go all the way back to the beginning and get to see everything and how everything works.
Well, I definitely agree. And I thought, I had much warmer feelings for the start of this movie than I did for the rest of it. Because the first two stories, first of all, I did not realize that this movie was divided into chapters. So when it started with Julia, I was like, what? Or not Julia, that's the name of the actress, whatever the character's name is. When it started with her, I was thinking, are we really doing the Nope thing? But then it moved on to Archer, and I was like, oh, so it's kind of be, we're kind of, yeah, we're going to get that differing perspectives thing. And yeah, then what, the next one was Paul, wasn't it?
I think so, yes.
Yeah. And I was like, what? I don't care about what Paul has to say. he doesn't have a connection to this event in the same way that teacher Justine. And Archer does. Justine?
Yeah.
Yeah, that Justine and Archer do. And even by the time we get to the principal, his section is less about, in fact, I'd actually say it's not at all about how this event is affecting him and the community at large. It's just about how he ended up attacking Justine at the gas station.
Yeah.
It's so... Go ahead.
I agree. It's just there to propel the plot forward. It's not there because there's, like, something meaningful that needs to be conveyed. It's there because we have to get to the next step.
Yeah. And I was thinking, in the absence of any advantages that this structure gives the story, it seems like we have, or I have, a lot of room to think about the drawbacks, the many drawbacks, because it makes it feel disjointed. There's not a real good sense of cohesion. It's not a really good sense of momentum, because so many different people are doing so many different things on their own. It does feel like an anthology of short stories related to a single event. And so, yeah, again, this movie has no main character. And the characters that it does have, by virtue of its structure, cannot be developed to the extent that I feel they should be in order to get me invested in their individual stories. And I was just thinking, I think that this movie would be better if it was told in a more standard structure. Like, if the stories were braided together rather than just being sort of placed alongside each other, I think that that could really work. And especially if we maybe trim the drug addicted guy's story. I'm thinking maybe 80, 90, 100%. And buff the people dealing with the fallout of this tragic event, maybe 50, 60, 70%.
Yeah. No, I 100% agree. I mean, after I saw this movie, I was kind of baffled because I would say the main character, if you were to have main characters, it would presumably be Justine and Archer, and they completely disappear for the movie for the entire, almost the entire second act, just to return in the third act. And yeah, I think it being linear, ironically, like Magnolia is told, I think would make it better. I think it would make a lot of moments better. Certainly it would make Gladys sending the principal after Justine, I think, a little bit more of an exciting moment, because it's not that exciting when we see it, because we're like, yeah, this is, I've been here. I know that he's coming after her, like a weapon or something.
Hey. It's true. Let us never forget the words of our friend Alfred Hitchcock. A bomb exploding when no one expects it. I'm butchering this, by the way. A bomb exploding when no one expects it is a surprise. Two characters having a conversation when the audience knows there's a bomb under the table, that's tension.
Yeah. No, I think it, yeah. I think that's very... And I guess this is where I would pivot then. You already said that you didn't find this movie very scary. But I think... Right, let's talk about that a little bit. Did you find any moments of it scary? Because I personally found at least one moment to be fairly scary for me, which is Alex's mom coming out of the house to snip a hair from Justine. I thought that was a pretty... I love how long it holds. I love how creepy she walks. I'm in the same boat as you, that I thought the first two stories had me fairly invested and excited for the rest of the movie, and then it just kept on stumbling and not getting anything done. But this shot where the woman comes out of the house with scissors was easily maybe one of my favorite moments in the movie, and the most scared I was in the movie.
I don't know. I feel like I've seen too many horror movies at this point to be scared by, ooh, here it comes. So here's a question. Watching this in the theater, how was the darkness for you? Because I watched this movie on a TV, and there came a point where I was like, okay, this cannot be how I'm supposed to be watching this. And I cranked the brightness on the TV all the way up, and still, there were times where maybe I would be scared if I could see what was happening. But, like, a significant portion of the climax when Archer and Justine are just kind of farting around with hypnotized Paul and drug guy, where I was like, I have no clue what's going on here because I can't see a thing.
I had no issues in the theater, especially not with that section. There was maybe some pieces in like Archer's dream that were really dark, but it was only when like everything was genuinely really dark. I thought it was really well lit and I could see everything just fine.
Well, darn, I guess that's something to do with the TV.
So your rating is irrelevant now. You have to watch it again.
I like Archer's dream sequence when the time appears on an assault rifle and the movie's like, you get it? You understand what I'm saying?
That's
here?
One of the things that was most frustrating, because reading reviews, people are like, yeah, it's about a traumatic event in a school. It's got to be about a school shooting. Show me one piece of evidence besides the gun in the sky that even the director admits means nothing. Like, in interviews, he was asked, what does the gun mean? And he's like, I don't know, dude. I just put it in there. Which is, funnily enough, also how Yorgos Lanthimos explains his movies, where they're like, why did you make this choice? And he's like, it came to me in a dream the day we were shooting.
Good lord.
Which, that's great. They went to the David Lynch school of how to make a movie. It's just not for me, because I don't think the gun is just ridiculous. Yeah, I rolled my eyes when I saw that in the theater. I was like, oh, good grief.
Well, I mean, there's that big, what'd you call that? Like a makeshift shrine of gifts and stuff that says Maybrook Strong. That's classic school shooting imagery. The aftermath, that kind of thing happens.
Yeah.
Just in general, I could understand in the beginning, I was like, okay, I'm tracking with this because school shootings happen, at least in America, and they have these knock-on effects afterwards, and I could see that in the community group meeting they were having where everyone was upset, understandably so. I guess as soon as we realize, hey, this is a witch doing all this, that all kind of goes out the window. I feel like at that point, we've kind of dropped this analogy, allegory thread at that point. And I did see, I was reading a review about, like, weapons shows how people will invent scapegoats rather than address the obvious problem. And I was like, the obvious problem, the witch? They should have been like, guys, what are we doing harassing this teacher? There's clearly a witch here and we need to solve it. If that is supposed to be, if the witch is supposed to be a metaphor for people refusing to enact gun safety laws, I think guns are a little bit more in your face than an actual witch casting actual spells.
And this, I agree. And I'm kind of glad that, firstly, that you picked this movie, and secondly, that you agree with me on everything, so that we don't have to have an argument here. Because I think that's absolutely true. I don't understand where people are getting off saying this movie is saying something about this subject.
Where do you get off?
And I was telling our parents this, because I was saying how we're reviewing Weapons and, this is what I think about this. I feel like, firstly, I feel like you, where I see people saying these things in reviews, and I'm like, show me in the movie. Give me the textual evidence, which is not needed all the time, like when I'm arguing something, for instance. But, you know, I compare it to Whiplash, right? Where when I say Whiplash is about the toxic relationship a person can have with fame and notoriety, if you were to say, Nathan, where is that in the movie? I'm like, brother, give me a pen and paper. Let me write down the scenes, right? Clearly, when the characters are having a discussion about it at the dinner table. Clearly, when the character, right, is facing a choice between fame and, like, liking himself and not most likely committing suicide or dying of a drug overdose. Like, these are clear moments where the movie is saying something meaningful about something that exists in the real world. And I just don't see how you can point to anywhere in Weapons where it's doing that. Like you said, there's moments where you're like, I can kind of see that. But by the time we get to the end of the movie, all of those metaphors have fallen apart. Because it's just, yeah, there was a witch, bro. What could we have done? Like, Alex could have murdered her right away, but I think that's asking a lot of a kid who does, let me say this, very admirably, one of the most competent core protagonists of all time. Alex did a great job. But I just don't, and we talked about this with One Battle After Another, I don't think you can just have individual moments in a movie that say that, I just think you should, if it's going to be like a big deal or something that people are talking about, I think you need multiple scenes of it. And maybe that's just me, and maybe movies would be better if they were all just a bunch of disparate things on a bunch of different subjects, but I find it much more compelling when a movie is about one thing and studiously builds its case from scene to scene until we get to an incredible climax where it makes a meaningful statement on the human condition. That's way better to me than here's some nonsense a couple of times and then, like, here's our climax, it's a bit of a joke.
Well, yeah, I think it sets itself up for... I mean, I don't know if it would be meaningful or not, but it sets itself up to say something about these kinds of tragedies. And then it just... I think that the witch probably is not super conducive to this kind of allegory, because the real sticking point about school shootings, and stop me if I'm wrong here, is that the victims are mainly irretrievable.
Yeah.
Which is not the case here. So that I don't know. It's weird. And I feel like between this and One Battle After Another, I should say, I'm not opposed to any of this inherently. I just think it's a little, I just think it's sloppily done in both cases.
Yeah, it's bad. These two episodes were anti-revolution and pro-school shooting is what we're coming off like. Okay,
that's not even remotely. I don't think, let's not even put that out there. I do want to talk about this villain. We've been kind of dancing around Gladys.
Sure.
But it's time to give her our full attention, because if you didn't know, Nathan or listening audience, Zach Cregger has expressed real interest in, and I think might actually be in the process of, sketching out a prequel for this character. I have no interest in that.
Oh.
And obviously, not every movie is made for me, nor should it be. But Gladys is a fine antagonist, and the actress is doing a fine job, but I thought she was pretty one-dimensional. I mean, she's one-dimensionally evil. She's a witch. I don't really care how she came to be a witch or how she discovered her magical powers or anything like that. By the time she died, I was like, that's all I need to know about this character. And who knows? Maybe we'll have a Penguin situation on our hands where the prequel or the spinoff based on the minor or secondary character is incredible. And it turns out that there's even though I have a less rosy vision of the Penguin, but it turns out that all you ever needed in life was to learn more about this character and spend more time with them. As it stands right now, I could not imagine myself showing up day one like, oh, here we go, let's learn about GLaDOS.
Yeah, I think I might like GLaDOS a little more than you, although the more that I think about it, everything that's cool about her is kind of also what's cool about Pennywise from It. So your Stephen King analogy, I think, is very on point, very apropos. Because especially her showing up in the dreams of people and showing up in the forest, if she had been eating a child in the forest, it would have just been that one shot from It. Also, her showing up in the dream, I think the second time, was what got the very disruptive couple that was sitting beside me in the theater to exclaim profanities, which I did not appreciate in my film. Like an 80-year-old man.
Live streaming their reaction on Twitch or something.
I think I said this in the episode, and I told you, they might have been. They did not stop chatting the whole time, and they wouldn't... I think I mentioned this to you, that at one point Josh Brolin was on screen and someone was, and they were like, that looks a lot like Jim Carrey. No, it doesn't. But if you're listening to this, I would appreciate it if you talked less during movies. If you're listening to this, people who saw Weapons, whenever that was. But yeah, I agree. GLaDOS is a decent villain, and she's certainly in keeping with, I mentioned this during One Battle After Another, but I think the current zeitgeist is very much genre mashups and genre bending, which is bad for me because I can't really pronounce genre very consistently and I get made fun of for it.
Yeah, seriously. Deservedly so.
And I think this movie is another example, right? GLaDOS is scary in that her powers are disturbing and spooky to watch. But she's also kind of funny because, right, she presents as a affable sort of older woman in her first scenes, right? She seems kind of clumsy and elderly and it's kind of goofy, and it's not until we get right to Alex's section where we see her as a very malevolent person. And so I think that's one of the things that really attracts people to the character is this, which again, I would say is also something that attracts people to Pennywise, that he's kind of funny and malevolent at the same time, that he is trying to get a rise out of people along with trying to eat them and kill them or whatever. So I think she's a decent villain. Certainly it was not when I went into the movie. I guess I sort of presumed there might be a supernatural explanation, if there was an explanation at all, for the kids disappearing. I did not wager it's going to be a witch trying to get more youth or whatever it is that she needs to get from these people that she's taking control of. So that was surprising, I guess, which I always like in a movie. I'm not going to say I guess. I do like it when a movie is surprising and goes in novel sort of directions, which isn't to say this is the most unique direction this could have gone. If it was Aliens, I think that would have been more surprising to me personally. But yeah, I think she's decent, but I don't know how I feel about a prequel, so I'm not going to speak on that, but...
We are definitely living in Get Out's world. Mm. Like that movie spawned the gold rush of horror plus a dash of comedy plus a heaping helping of social commentary that we are still living in today, as evidenced by this movie.
Yes.
And that's fine. I don't have any problem with that. And I don't have any problem with genre mashups either. Genre. It's easy. Yeah, I just don't care. Like, Gladys, yeah, fine, whatever. I just don't care. I'm saying all the same things that I said in our review of One Battle After Another. I don't care. She's fine. She's funny. She reminds me of Pennywise. Yeah. Pennywise is better because he looks cooler. And he's, I guess, Bill Skarsgård is just kind of allowed to go for it more than Gladys. Gladys generally seems like a fairly affable, clumsy old woman, which is amusing sometimes, but it does kind of detract from her intimidation factor. And by the end, I was like, yeah, all right, well, there, she's dead. I don't really care. I don't want to learn more about her. Try and track with me here the process of her magic.
Okay.
So,
always the best thing to do is overanalyze movie.
Well,
science.
I'm just curious.
Yeah.
If you want to hypnotize someone, you need something of theirs. It doesn't really matter what. I did actually think, while Alex was taking stuff like names off of people's bins in the classroom, I was thinking, like, what is defined as belonging to a person in this magic system? If you have that, then you wrap it around a stick and add blood and then ring the bell and they're on your side. If you want, having hypnotized this person, if you want them to kill someone, you specifically need hair, stick, blood, break the stick, and person will, right, pursue their target to the ends of the earth, presumably.
Mm-hmm.
Is that your assessment?
Yes, that checks out to me.
Well, I don't know. I mean, that, I feel like if the magic was, like, super out there and just, like, weird and ritualistic and incantatory, then I would maybe be a bit of, gosh, heavens, had a bit of a stroke there. Then I would maybe be a little more on board with, like, okay, wow, I would love to explore more of that, getting more of the witchcraft side. But the witchcraft as it exists here in this movie seems fairly basic.
Well, and it seems to just be tied to the tree, because Alex is able to do it. So it doesn't seem like there's any special power that Gladys has. It seems like she's got an evil tree. I guess if we're poking holes in things, this was something that came to mind as I watched the movie and continued to bug me throughout the film. How on earth was Archer the only person to think, hey, let's draw a line and see where the heck these kids were heading and see if maybe we can't land somewhere? And maybe they just messed up, right, because they went in the line and they saw, like, they just saw a bunch of houses. They didn't know enough to say, hey, that's Alex's house. That's so sketchy. I would call, there's no chance that happened, right? Surely if they did a little bit of triangulating, they'd be, wow, all of the kids went to Alex's house. And Alex is also the only kid who didn't disappear. I'm suspecting Alex and his house might have something to do with what happened. And, right, they did go and search the house. I feel like I'd put up, I don't know, I was baffled that Archer was the only person, and that it felt to me like it should have had more people solving that aspect of it.
I don't know.
That's just me.
I mean, two things. First of all, not only that, but it seems like Archer's the only person who noticed that all of the kids were running in the exact same way. Or I seem to remember him saying, like, oh, this, he's running the same way Matthew was, as if this is like a new thing that he's realizing, when that is like immediately apparent to anyone who watches this thing. The other thing is,
he had probably only seen the video of his son. He probably hadn't seen the video of the other kids running away.
And nobody mentioned? The police never mentioned? Like, hey, by the way, everyone was running in the exact same way.
I mean, that feels like an insane thing as a cop to say. Like, we also suspect the way they were running had something to do with it. I mean, it's certainly odd, right?
I mean, it clearly links it, doesn't it?
I guess. I think they're thinking the stronger linkage is the fact that they all did it. And so the fact that they were running the same way is maybe ancillary to them having run away at all.
That seems like a bit of a stretch. But the other thing is that I'm thinking if Gladys had hypnotized Alex as well, she probably could have won this.
For sure, yeah.
Because the only reason suspicion is brought upon the Alex household is because he is tracked there, and Gladys has very subtly put papers all over the windows and sat the parents staring into space in the living room. But if Alex was part of the people who disappeared, Gladys can just do what she does, right? Fill in for the parents and say, it would even be easy. It'd be even easier. Like, oh, they're too distraught. They can't even talk about it. So I'm here to help you. And then she's home free.
Yeah. Let me enough let the of dog that. Out real
Let's.
Fast.
We're not applying for CinemaSins here. So I want to zoom out a little bit and say that all of these are problems and all of them detract from the movie, but the actual there he goes. He's off. The actual experience of watching the movie is broadly fine, right? Everyone here is a good actor. The guy whose name I can never pronounce, and Heinrich, I don't know.
Alden and Heinrich?
Yeah, and Heinrich, Brolin, Garner, everyone's doing a good job. The movie is shot well. There's some nice action-y, set-piece-y kind of moments, like when the principal is attacking Justine. That's good. When the movie is like kicking into high gear, and people are fighting. I liked the scene of the children chasing down Alice. I thought that was kind of funny and cathartic, which I'm guessing is the point. Man, that ending, golly, Ned, that is a Stephen King ending if ever I've seen one. When the narrator came back in, I was like, are we really doing this? And then it ended, and I was like, all right. I guess the movie's over now. But yeah, it's generally enjoyable to watch because it's well made. Some of these problems are problems that you only think about, that you only realize afterwards when you start thinking about it. And in general, yeah, it's an entertaining movie. And clearly Zach Cregger is a talented director working with a talented cast and a talented crew of people. So for all the problems the movie has, it's still not, it's hardly annoying or frustrating or boring to watch.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think this is always when I'm struggling with a movie, I always kind of try to break it down into what are the ways I can get into this movie, right? And so for this movie, there's a couple different avenues, right? A lot of the really positive reviews are viewing it like Get Out, where it's a very well-made horror movie with some additional comedic elements that's saying something about society, making some social commentary. I've already explained, I don't think that necessarily holds true to the movie, and certainly doesn't hold true to what I see in the movie. And so then I have to go, okay, is it a good horror movie? Which I don't think it necessarily is, because again, by the end, it's fairly action-heavy, like the final fight between all of the different people being hypnotized and such, and the kids chasing after Gladys is, you know, that's action-heavy. And it's comedic, obviously. The kids running after Gladys is a overtly comedic thing. I thought it was funny. I was laughing in the theater because it's a funny, funny section. So I can't really get behind the movie as a horror movie, but as an entertaining and well-made story, I can get behind it in that sense, right? I agree with you. It's well shot. It looks great. It is a mildly amusing, although kind of kills some of its own pacing in places, way of telling the story, the non-linear sections and stuff. I'm kind of building up towards a rating here, so we might just go into ratings if you're ready.
Well, one last thing. I just want to say that horror movie music, unless it's composed by John Carpenter, is so disappointing to me. Like, I'm so tired of the diddly 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 spider strings, right? You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
And just the formless, discordant songs. Let's put in a little more effort. Let's look to The Shining. Look to Halloween.
The Shining.
Yeah. Those. Again, John Carpenter. He does the music for so many of his movies, and it's great. I remember when we saw Candyman, the remake or reboot, I guess.
Yeah.
The song that played over the opening credits was great. I don't know if you remember this, but it was such a unique and interesting song. And I was like, wow, this is going to be great. And that's the only unique song on the soundtrack. The rest of it is just the, like, yeah, the thing.
Spider strings. What a great descriptor.
I didn't come up with that. That's like a common term.
Dang. We're never going to enter the zeitgeist, Elliot.
Well, sorry. We have Life is a Hard and Full of Disappointments. That's our thing.
Oh, yeah, that's going to really catch on.
It will. It's just like, come on, guys. I wouldn't listen to this casually. No one would listen to this casually. Let's try something else.
I hate this dog. Yeah, I agree. I'm going into my rating. I think the movie is entertaining. I don't get much out of it besides that. And I wouldn't even say it's, I mean, this is going to be obvious from my rating, but I wouldn't say it's even as good as One Battle After Another, which did, in my opinion, at least have some semblance of a thematic bent and some social commentary, even if I didn't think it was incredible. I just genuinely think this movie has none. So all it is an entertaining story. I can't see myself ever watching it. The only way I ever would is if I was, like, forced to or something. So I'm giving it a 6 out of 10.
This movie is fine to watch. It's a movie that I've watched once. I'm never going to watch it again. Probably never going to think about it again. I actually think it's pretty much in the same ballpark as One Battle After Another quality-wise, so I'm going to give it the exact same rating of a C-.
All right. That takes us to recommendations. My recommendation, if you want another witch movie, I'm going to go to the witch movie, The Blair Witch Project. I think it's called The Blair Witch Project.
Yeah.
Yeah. I watched this very recently. I was obviously...
Bear Witch.
What?
You said The Bear Witch.
Oh, sorry.
I was thinking of a grizzly bear casting spells.
All right. Don't interrupt me, please. I watched this very recently because I'm pretty sure I was not alive when it originally released, so I was not able to see all of the hubbub around the marketing, which is very famous for this movie. But I think, outside of all of the viral marketing and all of the different things about it's a real story and the actors actually died making it, the movie is just really, really great. It is very scary. It is very, I watched this like early in the morning in bright day with a not so fantastic sound system. If I watched this in the dead of night with great sound, I'd probably not be able to sleep until 2 days later. It is psychological horror. So much of the movie and what's scary about it is the unknown. You never see the witch. You never see what's scary. It's always something lingering right outside of eye right outside of what you can see, right outside of what you can experience. It's not a violent movie. All of the horror is just based off of you've stumbled into something that you don't have any way of understanding, and now you're gonna die, and slowly coming to the realization that the only thing you can do is film it for some sort of insane desire for posterity and fame, even as you're dying, which I think is something that I find interesting and I feel has continued to be very relevant in this modern age where we do feel a need to record everything, regardless of, right, the fact that we could die doing it, or something bad could happen, or something bad is happening, and all we're doing is filming it. So I think that's interesting, and I just think it's a really well-made and really effective psychological horror movie.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. That's too much for me. I don't think I could handle that.
You'd have a tough time.
I think I've said before that I from a young age I've been afraid of being lost.
Ooh.
And like getting lost. I'm afraid of getting lost in a city, getting lost out in the woods, being hunted. No, thank you.
Not even hunted. I mean, they're just getting messed with, man.
Yeah, just getting pranked.
Yeah.
Hey, you gonna bash on your tent? Hilarious. Kerpranked.
Yeah. Justin Kerprank. Anyway.
Justin Kerprank. All right. Yeah. My recommendation, I've actually changed my recommendation while we were talking, because it's a movie that we often used as a point of comparison to this movie, and I know this is kind of cheating because I've already recommended Get Out for something before, but I am going to take us back to the dawn of this new kind of mode of horror making, where it's made by former comedian. There's comedic elements in it.
Yeah.
It's got the social commentary in it. And yeah, this movie does that, just does it better than Weapons. I think the social commentary is more clear and it's more deeply integrated into the movie's like on-screen action.
Yeah.
I think it's funnier. I think it's more engaging. It's got better characters. It's just, I can understand how this movie would prompt a wave of imitators. So That's my recommendation. Life started full of disappointments. There it is.
That's a great recommendation. I agree. That's a great movie. People should stop trying to rip it off or trying to emulate its success, because not even Jordan Peele can emulate his success.
I was going to say the exact same thing.
I mean, but anyway, yes. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. This is two controversial episodes in a row. I think this one may be a little bit more controversial than the last one. I think I was still fairly positive on one battle after another. But two controversial episodes in a row. Send us an email if you are, you know, angry about it, if you have opinions, if you disagree. I'd love to know why you disagree, why you think we're wrong. I'd love to hear that. But anyway, we're going to be back next week with another brand new movie review, so be sure to look forward to that. Be sure to tune in, and we hope you have a great week in between.